One more. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we are going to start a new paper, paper 134 from the Urantia book, The Transition Years, and that's on page 1483 of the original books, or paper 13401 on all the rest of them. So we're ready to get started. Let me change the screen here. By the way, this picture is the picture of Jesus, and that's Mount Hermon back in the background. So, which
Wow.
will be the last, very last section in this paper. Okay, transition years. Here we go. Let me start out reading so Diane can get her breath. The transition years. During the Mediterranean journey, Jesus had carefully studied the people that he met and the countries through which he passed. And at about this time, he reached his final decision as to the remainder of his life on earth. He had fully considered and now fully approved the plan, which provided that he be born of Jewish parents in Palestine, and he therefore deliberately returned to Galilee to await the beginning of his life work as a public teacher of truth. He began to lay plans for a public career in the land of his father Joseph's people, and he did this of his own free will. And he did that long before long before he started his mission. Okay. Hear all sorts of things beeping off here. All right, let's go on to the next one. Diane, would you take the next one?
Jesus
Jesus
had
had
found
found out
out through personal and
and human
human experience
experience
that
that Palestine
Palestine was
was
the
the best
best
place
place
to
in
come
all the
for
Roman world,
wherein
wherein
to
to
set
set
forth
forth
the
the
closing
closing
chapters,
chapters,
and
and
to
to
extend
extent
the
the
final,
enact,
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 excuse me,
to
to
enact
enact
the
the
final
final scenes
scenes
of
of
his
his life
life on
on
earth.
earth. For the first time, he became fully satisfied with the program of opening, manifesting his true nature, and of revealing his divine identity among the Jews and Gentiles of his native Palestine. He definitely decided to finish his life on earth and to complete his career of mortal existence in the same land in which he entered the human experience as a helpless babe. His Urantia career began among the Jews in Palestine, and he chose to terminate his life in Palestine and among the Jews.
Now, why do they say this in this paragraph? Because Jesus had gone out, gone to Rome, met many different kinds of people, different kinds of societies, and had lots of options offered to him by different societies to become a preacher, didn't he? I mean, a teacher. So he just made the decision to go ahead and do his teaching among his own Jewish people. Of his father. So that's why they mentioned that here, because he had lots of options and other things he could have done. Now, this next one is the 30th year. I want to bring that out because every time I look at this, I want to call it the 13th year. But it's not. It's Jesus's 30th year, and this is AD 24. So, Pam, would you take this one? Excuse me.
After taking leave of Gonad and Ganid at Charax in December of AD 23, Jesus returned by way of Ur to Babylon, where he joined a desert caravan that was on its way to Damascus. From Damascus, he went to Nazareth, stopping only a few hours at Capernaum, where he paused to call on Zebedee's family. There he met his brother James, who had sometime previously come over to work in his place in Zebedee's boat shop. after talking with James and Jude, who also chanced to be in Capernaum, these little AI things are popping up. who also chanced to be in Capernaum. And after turning over to his brother James the little house with John Zebedee, which John Zebedee had managed to buy, Jesus went on to Nazareth.
Now, this is important because this is the house that Mary ends up living in until she dies, about a year after Jesus' death. So, but this is where she ended up going by that point. All right, and so I wanted to bring this up. Now, another point they're going to make here in this paper in a little bit is the fact that baby Ruth is no longer a baby at this point. She's 15. So one of the reasons Jesus wanted to go back to Nazareth was to talk to baby Ruth and, get to know her and that sort of thing. So it's going to come up here in a second. All right. Jane, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. At the end of his Mediterranean journey, Jesus had received sufficient money to meet his living expenses almost up to the time of the beginning of his public ministry. But aside from Zebedee of Capernaum and the people whom he met on this extraordinary trip, the world never knew that he made this journey. His family always believed that he spent his time in study at Alexandria. Jesus never confirmed these beliefs, neither did he make open denial of such misunderstandings.
So no one knew that Jesus went to Rome then, did he? Or to all the other cities that they mentioned along the way there and the way back, like Charax and Capernaum, or not Capernaum, but Antioch and things like that. So no one, and Jesus never, as far as we know, never told anyone. So no one knew that he spent this long amount of time traveling around and doing these other things. So that's why none of it's in the gospel, is it? Not a single word about any of this.
Right.
All right. Excuse me, y'all. During the stay of a few weeks at Nazareth, Jesus visited with his family and friends, spent some time in the repair shop with his brother Joseph, but devoted most of his attention to Mary and Ruth. Ruth was then nearly 15 years old, and this was Jesus's first opportunity to have long, excuse me, talks with her since she had become a young woman. So he wanted to talk with her and get his ideas of life and that sort of thing through to Ruth before he started his ministry. Now, y'all probably, excuse me, remember that Ruth was really enamored with Jesus and she always believed everything he did, right? Diane, would you take?
Both Simon and Jude had for some time wanted to get married, but they had disliked to do this without Jesus' consent. Let me start
I hear
over.
you. Because I lost your sound.
Oh, okay. All right. Both Simon and Jude, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Both Simon and Jude had for some time wanted to get married, but they had disliked to do this without Jesus' consent. Accordingly, they had postponed these events, hoping for their eldest brother's return. Though they all regarded James as the head of the family in most matters, when it came to getting married, they wanted the blessing of Jesus. So Simon and Jude were married at a double wedding in early March of this year, AD 24. All the older children were now married. Only Ruth, the youngest, remained at home with Mary.
You're muted.
Would you
You're
take this?
muted.
Oh, I'm sorry. They,
That's okay.
you want to take this one?
Jesus visited with the individual members of the family quite normally and naturally, but when they were all together, he had so little to say that they remarked about it amongst themselves. Mary especially was disconcerted by this unusually peculiar behavior of her firstborn son.
Why do you think that Jesus was kind of aloof from his family during this period of time?
Did he want to hear what they had to say?
No, I think he was this way because he was preparing for his mission and he had already divorced himself from the family. So he didn't want to recreate these familiar relationships he had before he left, because then they would have a tendency to start to depend on him again. Okay. And he knew shortly after this that he was going to, excuse me, he was going to start his mission, and he definitely wanted to be separate from the family during his mission, didn't he? That's why he didn't choose any of his brothers as apostles. Okay. Excuse me, y'all. I'm having a hard time here. Jane, would you take the next one?
Okay. About the time Jesus was preparing to leave Nazareth, the conductor of a large caravan, which was passing through the city, was taken violently ill. And Jesus, being a linguist, volunteered to take his place. Since this trip would necessitate his absence for a year, and inasmuch as all his brothers were married and his mother was living at home with Ruth, Jesus called a family conference at which he proposed that his mother and Ruth go to Capernaum to live in the home which he had so recently given to James. Accordingly, a few days after Jesus left with the caravan, Mary and Ruth moved to Capernaum, where they lived for the rest of Mary's life in the home that Jesus had provided. Joseph and his family moved into the old Nazareth home.
Okay, so he provided for his mother and Ruth by giving them the house that he had obtained in Capernaum when he was working as a boat builder, right? So that's how they ended up in that, and that's where Mary actually died, was in that house. Okay, and as far as we know, Ruth stayed there. They don't really tell us. Okay, gosh, I guess I'm up again. Who's there on the iPad? Someone's there on the iPad. I don't know who it is. This was one of the more unusual years in the inner experience of the Son of Man. Great progress was made in effecting working harmony between his human mind and the
I can't hear you, Gary. I can't hear. What?
Okay, that wasn't me. That was the site. Let me check to see if you're in.
Yeah.
Somebody's in on an iPad.
Yes, I'm on an iPad. This is Mary Crane, and Gary Lots's father is helping me get on.
This is a friend of mine, Mary.
Okay. You got friends, Gary?
You know, I have to scrounge long and
Gary,
hard.
we've been friends for years, haven't we? Because we are reading the Urantia book with a different group of people. We've been reading for at least what, 9 years, 8 years?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not a beginner then, I take
No, no.
it. All right, well, welcome. All right, let me start over here. This is one of the more unusual years in the inner experience of the Son of Man. Great progress was made in the affecting working harmony between his human mind and the indwelling adjuster. The adjuster had been actively engaged in reorganizing the thinking and in rehearsing the mind for the great events which were in the not then distant future. The personality of Jesus was preparing for his great change in attitude towards the world. That's what we're talking about in the last slide, right? His change in attitude to the world and his family. These were the in between times, the tradition stage for that being who began life as God appearing as man, and who now making ready to complete his earth career as man appearing as God. So this is a lot of intellectual and mental work for Jesus during this time, because remember that Jesus, we're going to find out on Mount Hermon at the end of this chapter, releases his guardian angels before he starts his mission, because he wanted to go through the final stages of his teaching mission. Excuse me, y'all. Without the angel, he only had the thought adjuster with him, not the angels all the time. So he released the guardian angel. So this is where he was preparing for all this to happen. And this is a map of the journeys during this period of time, and y'all can look at those in your leisure from the slides. All right, the caravan trip to Caspian, Diane.
A caravan trip to Caspian. It was the 1st of April, AD 24, when Jesus left Nazareth on the caravan trip to the Caspian Sea region. The caravan, which Jesus joined as its conductor, was going from Jerusalem by way of Damascus and Lake Urmia and I don't know, Azria, Media, and Parthia. To the southeastern Caspian Sea region. It was a full year before he returned from this journey.
Okay, so Jesus actually led this caravan, which he got paid for, as a caravan leader, during this period of time. So this helped with his finances also. But this is another trip that it's not documented anywhere in the New Testament or anything like that, just in the Urantia book. So this is in AD 24 when he was 30 years old. Remember that, okay? And here's a picture of that trip, and you can't see it very well, but you can download these slides and make this as large as you'd like. And there's another one.
It was really quite a distance.
That's quite a distance for a caravan to go. All right. Pam, would you take the next one, please?
For Jesus, this caravan trip was another adventure of exploration and personal ministry. He had an interesting experience with his caravan family, passengers, guards, and camel drivers, scores of men, women, and children residing along the route, followed by the caravan lived. Followed by the caravan, lived richer lives as a result of their contact with Jesus. To them, the extraordinary conductor of a commonplace caravan. Not all who enjoyed these occasions of his personal ministry profited thereby, but the vast majority of those who met and talked with him were made better for the remainder of their natural lives.
And this is goes to show you that you can bring the ca camels to the water, but you can't make them all drink, can you?
Right.
It's the same way with people. He was leading the caravan, so he had camels instead of horse to water. Anyway, y'all get it. Jane, would you take the next one, please?
Of all his world travels, this Caspian Sea trip carried Jesus nearest to the Orient and enabled him to gain a better understanding of the Far Eastern peoples. He made intimate and personal contact with every one of the surviving races of Urantia, excepting the Red. He equally enjoyed his personal ministry to each of these varied races and blended peoples, and all of them were receptive to the living truth which he brought them, the Europeans from the far west and the Asiatics from the far east alike. Gave attention to his words of hope and eternal life, and were equally influenced by the life of loving service and spiritual ministry, which he so graciously lived among them.
So notice here that Jesus had contact with every single race on the earth except the red man, right? Because by this time the red man had already migrated to the Americas, right? And to South America also. So he never got the opportunity to deal with any of the red race. Which is interesting because I often wondered if after the resurrection, and they don't tell us everything, right? Always made me wonder as if after the resurrection, if he appeared to some of the red men
I suspect
in the United States too, because he didn't get the opportunity to do that while he was alive.
Roger, somewhere in the back of my mind, there is a remembrance of something I read somewhere that he did appear to the red man, but I can't tell you any more than that.
Yeah, I it seems to me that's the case for me too, Gary, but I can't pin my finger on it, you know. Maybe I need to read the book about 100 more times, you know. You think maybe?
Possibly.
Possibly. Yeah. By the way, I worked on the eighth chapter of Jesus Who, What, When, and Where today. Finished the two-person podcast and the single-person podcast of myself for my self-script. And it came out wonderfully. There's so much good information on it, but I won't be posting it for a couple weeks yet because I need to do some tweaking on it. I had a couple things I wanted to change, but y'all have that to look forward to. I sent out the seventh one to everyone yesterday, I think. I put it online anyway. Gary, would you take this one, please?
All right, the caravan trip was successful in every way. This was a most interesting episode in the human life of Jesus. For the functioned during for excuse me, for he functioned during this year in an executive capacity, being responsible for the material entrusted to his charge and for the safe conduct of the travelers making up the caravan party. And he most faithfully, efficiently, and wisely discharged his multiple duties.
So he really, was an executive during this time, taking care of leading everyone and everything else. So this is a good experience for him, any way you look at it. Now, what was your friend's name? I know it's not iPad.
Mary.
Mary, Mary, would you like to? Can you see it well enough to read on your iPad?
Let's see. What did you? Where did you just finish?
You
Yes, I
should be on
did.
the screen right in front of you.
On the return.
On the return from the Caspian region, Jesus gave up the direction of the caravan at Lake Urmia, where he tarried for slightly over 2 weeks. He returned as a passenger with a ladder caravan to Damascus, where the owners of the camels, well, where the owners of the camels besought him to remain in their service. Declining this offer, he journeyed on with a caravan train to Capernaum. How do you say that? Capernaum?
Capernaum, either one's correct. I've heard it pronounced both
Many,
ways.
many ways.
Yeah.
Arriving the 1st of April, AD 25, no longer did he regard Nazareth as his home. Capernaum had become the home of Jesus, James, Mary, and Ruth. But Jesus never again lived with his family. When in Capernaum, he made his home with the Zebedees.
Notice here that even when he was in close contact with his family from this point out, he always stayed with the Zebedees or like Lazarus's family and people like that. He rarely ever stayed back home. And this is part of the separating himself from his earthly family. And this is important during his ministry, which we'll find out a little bit later. All right. Let's see. Let's go on to the next one. This is Lake Urmia. And it shows the routes here for that. And there's another picture of it. And you'll have to bring these up slides up to be able to see this well. You can't see them on the. Okay. The Urmia lectures. Let me explain something about these lectures at Urmia. You're going to notice that none of the type here is in a different color or red or anything like that because these lectures are not the direct words like many places we've had in the previous parts of the book or in the latter parts of the book to come, were actually the words of Jesus, translated Jesus to Jesus' words. These are not. These are composite of two sets of angels and the Midwayer Commission, which put this information together because there was a disagreement between the angels of the churches and the angels of, excuse me, progress. As to what would should be included in these lectures that Jesus gave. He gave 20 some lectures during this period of time. So they're not direct words from Jesus, they're interpretations of the words of Jesus. pretty much like I do when we read the book. Okay. The Urmia lectures. On the way to the Caspian Sea, Jesus had stopped several days for a rest and recuperation at the old Persian city of Urmia on the western shores of Lake Urmia. Excuse me, y'all, I'm sorry. On the largest of these group of islands, situated a short distance offshore near Urmia, was located a large building, a lecture amphitheater dedicated to the spirit of religion. This structure was really a temple of the philosophy of religions. And this is interesting. We're going to find out that the guy that started this never revealed what religion he was. So it's kind of interesting. Diane.
This temple of religions had been built by a wealthy merchant citizen of Urmia and his three sons. This man was Cybotin, and Deboitin, and he numbered among his ancestors many diverse peoples.
Roger, you're muted.
Would you take the next one, Pam?
The lectures and discussions in this school of religion began at 10 o'clock every morning in the week. The afternoon session started at 3 o'clock, and the evening debates opened at 8 o'clock. Symbiotin, or one of his three sons, always presided at these sessions of teaching, discussion, and debate. The founder of this unique school of religions lived and died without ever revealing his personal religious beliefs.
So he never let his own beliefs influence what was done and said during these lectures, which is kind of interesting, really. Jane, would you take the next one?
On several occasions, Jesus participated in these discussions, and before he left Urmia, Symbiotin arranged with Jesus to sojourn with them for 2 weeks on his return trip and give 24 lectures on the brotherhood of man, and to conduct 12 evening sessions of questions, discussions, and debates on his lectures in particular and on the brotherhood of man in general.
Okay, and this is what I was talking about. This is kind of a composite. They're going to tell us about him, but it's kind of a composite of what he said because what was going on spiritually and politically during that period of time was different from today, and they tried to match it more up to today. Okay, Gary, would you take the next one, please?
In accordance with this arrangement, Jesus stopped off on the return trip and delivered these lectures. This was the most systematic and formal of all the master's teachings on Urantia. Never before or after did he so much as one subject. Let me read that again. Never before or after did he so much
Say
say
so
one.
much.
That's what's wrong. I'm missing something. Okay. Never before or after did he say so much on one subject as was contained in these lectures and discussions on the brotherhood of man. In reality, these lectures were on the kingdom of God and the kingdom of men.
You see this, why this is so important to him. His mission was what? The fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Right, so this is what he came to the planet for. All right, Mary, would you take the next one, please?
More than 30 religions and religious cults were represented on the faculty of this temple of religious philosophy. These teachers were chosen, supported, and fully accredited by their respective religious groups. At this time, there were about 75 teachers on the faculty, and they lived in cottages, each accommodating about a dozen persons. Every new moon, these groups were changed by the casting of lots. Intolerance, a contentious spirit, or any other disposition to interfere with the smooth running of the community would bring about the prompt and summary dismissal of the offending teacher. He would be unceremoniously dismissed, and his alternate in waiting would be immediately installed in his place. Woo!
Yeah,
Really?
they're
Controlling.
pretty strict. Although all everybody in the group that's been in our group for a long time knows that I've had to deject a couple people from our group that were,
Really? Wow.
causing discontent. So it comes about, unfortunately. Not that I wanted to, but there were two people individually that really caused problems during our meetings a few times, and I talked to them about it and couldn't straighten it out, so I just asked them to stop coming. So it worked out fine. But I don't ever turn anybody away that wants to learn, I can tell you that. Okay, so you ha the, everybody had to get along, regardless of what was going on. All right, guess I'm back up again. These teachers of the various religions made a great effort to show how similar their religions were in regard to the fundamental things of this life and the next. There was but one doctrine which had to be accepted in order to gain a seat on the faculty. Every teacher must represent a religion which recognizes God in some sort of supreme deity. There were five independent teachers on the faculty who did not represent any organized religion, and it was such an independent teacher that Jesus appeared before them. So he did not appear before them as a Jew, did he? He appeared as an independent teacher. Oh my goodness, dear. Can you read that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
When we, the Midwares, first prepared the summary of Jesus's teachings of Urmia, there arose a disagreement between the Seraphim and the churches and the Seraphim of Progress as to the wisdom of including these teachings in the Urantia Revelation. Conditions of the 20th century prevailing in both religion and human governments are so different from those prevailing in Jesus's day that it was indeed difficult to adapt the master's teachings at Urmia to the problems of the kingdom of God and the kingdoms of men, as these worlds' functions are existent in the 20th century. We were never able to formulate a statement of the master's teachings which was acceptable to both groups of these seraphim of planetary government. Finally, the Melchizedek chairman of the Revelatory Commission appointed a commission of three of our number to prepare our view of the Master's Urmia teachings as adapted to 20th century religious and political conditions on Urantia. Accordingly, we three secondary midwares completed such an adaptation of Jesus' teachings, restating his pronouncements as we would apply them to present-day world conditions. And we now present these statements as they stand after having been edited by the Melchizedek chairman of the Revelatory Commission.
Okay, now y'all can see how complicated and difficult it was for the Midware Commission to prepare this revelation for us to have, can't you? Okay, because there's a lot of beings involved in doing this, and each type of beings would have a different take on what was said and done during this period of time. It's not like you can just take whatever Jesus said and put it back out there, because if it's too far off from what we experience today, we couldn't relate to what he said, and that's what they were trying to do, right? But it's interesting, right in the middle of this paper, that they mentioned not only the Midware Commission, but they also mentioned that this was the Urantia Revelation too, which is kind of interesting. All right. Pam, would you take the next one, please?
Sovereignty, divine and human. The brotherhood of men is founded on the fatherhood of God. The family of God is derived from the love of God. God is love. God the Father divinely loves his children, all of them.
Okay, since God loves all of his children, that includes all of us and all his different types of beings and children, He doesn't hold any of them above anyone else, does he? He all treats them
Right.
equally, right? He loves them equally, just like a father loves all of his children. So they make that statement right at the front so that we get the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man is all based on God the Father and the love of God the Father. All right. Jane, would you take the next one, please?
The kingdom of heaven, the divine government, is founded on the fact of divine sovereignty, God the Spirit. Since God is Spirit, this kingdom is spiritual. The kingdom of heaven is neither material nor merely intellectual. It is a spiritual relationship between God and man.
All right, this needs to be broken down a little bit so that y'all understand what they're saying here is this. This relationship between God and man is not finite. Okay? It's not moronchial either. Okay? Even though we live in these different types of state as we progress up, the relationship between man and God is always spiritual. Okay? So your relationship with God right now is a spiritual relationship in the fact that your relationship with God is through that thought adjuster. Okay? So that thought adjuster, tweaking your thoughts and that sort of thing at night for you, that is a spiritual relationship. It's not a material thing and it's not a morontial thing. It's a spiritual thing. And that's the point they're trying to make here, because the sovereignty of everything from the finite to the morontia to the spiritual is always spirit-based. And that's why the sovereignty of Jesus or Michael during his seven bestowals is about the sovereignty of the spiritual relationship to all his creatures. Okay. So that's why this is so important, and they're talking about during this particular paragraph. Any questions about that, y'all? Well, y'all shake your head good.
Very good, Roger. Thank you.
All right. All right, who's up next? Jane, did you just read? I'm losing my mind tonight. I'm fighting off this.
I did just read.
Okay, Gary, would you take this one?
Okay, if different religions recognize the spirit sovereignty of God the Father, then will all such religions remain at peace? Only when one religion assumes that it is in some way superior to all others and that it possesses exclusive authority over other religions will such a religion presume to be intolerant of other religions or dare to persecute other religions' religious believers.
That's the answer to wars right there, right?
Lack of
Acceptance.
respect for his fellow man.
Your respect for your fellow man, that's right. Not assuming that your interpretation of your relationship with God is above anybody else's, right? And that all beings have the right to their own interpretation of the relationship between you and your creator. And if you do that and allow everyone to have leeway in that, there would be no wars any longer.
Now, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
What about the Islamic religion, where
Right.
they say, if you don't believe my way, you're dead?
That's a perfect example, Gary.
Okay, of one that, but what if you are not of the Islamic religion? How do you deal with that?
Well, you can try to share enlightenment with them that in reality that is not re allowed in the universe. When we first leave this planet and we get to mansion world number one, that's going to be very obvious right from the start, right? That whole concept that your any religion is superior to any other religion, and that includes the Urantia Revelation. There is no religion or no religious beliefs that have the right to impose their values on another group of religionists. That's what it boils down to. So, regardless of what anybody else believes, that doesn't mean you have to believe it, but that also means you do not have to accept it. And when one religion tries to impose its views and values upon another religion, that other religion has the right to protect themselves from that imposition. And that's why we have wars. Okay? And as
But
long as,
Roger,
yeah.
I guess what you're saying is we need to learn and follow Jesus's way, how he dealt with the people of his day
That's
in
exactly
terms
right.
of other religions.
That's
But
exactly right.
and if we live according to the example of Jesus because we are his. But there is no compromise in the fact that there was only one man, God.
What, there was only what? Say that again,
And
Jay.
one man that was God,
That's
and that
correct.
was Jesus of Nazareth.
That's correct.
So that there is no compromise in that.
There's no compromise in that any way you look at it. You cannot get off that first mansion world without recognizing your sovereign. And who's your sovereign?
Jesus.
Jesus, Michael, right? There's no way you're getting off that. You're only in remedial classes when you get to that first mansion world if you don't have a concept of who your sovereign is. They got to teach you, right? And if you're hard-headed enough on this planet not to ever realize that, you might make it to the mansion worlds, but you will not get off that first mansion world until you do. I'm telling you. Why do you think it's so important that we spread this revelation and we need teachers to spread this revelation in this world so that we can get more people ready to step into the next step, which is the mansion worlds, right? That's all there is to it. But in doing that, we can't become haughty to the point that we think our religion is better than everyone else. It's not. It's not at all. We're enlightened in many, many things with the book, but the point is we have to approach it that all we're trying to do is uplift our brothers and sisters in God, and they're already our brothers and sisters, even if they have error of thought, error of religion, and all these other things. We cannot treat them like they have those errors. Does that make sense?
Humility.
Humility. That's what it boils down to. Jesus was the most humble person to ever teach, didn't he? Because he never tore down anyone else's religion. He only enlightened them and uplifted them to a better way. And that's what we need to learn to do. And it's very hard. It's a process I've been trying to do for years and years and years. I have to stop myself constantly and saying to myself, what are you saying here? No, you can't say it like that. You can't do that. Okay. And that's part of the plan. So none of us are perfect. All right. Mary, would you take on the next one, please?
Religious peace, brotherhood, can never exist unless all religions are willing to completely divest themselves of all ecclesiastical authority and fully surrender all concept of spiritual sovereignty. God alone is spirit sovereign.
There it is, right? God alone is spiritually sovereign. And who's our representative of God on this planet?
Jesus. Michael.
Jesus, right? That's all there is to it. And he's the only one that's sovereign. There's no one else. There's never been anyone else. All right. You cannot have equality among religions, religious liberty, without having religious wars, unless all religions consent to the transfer of all religious sovereignty to some superhuman level, to God himself. That's what all the seven absolutes is about, isn't it? You know, why do I keep, harping on the seven absolutes for so many years here is because the sovereignty of God is tied up in the seven absolutes, which is God the Father, the I am, right? All right, so we have to transfer that, for that to him.
Kingdom of heaven in the hearts of men will create religious unity, not necessarily uniformity, because any and all religious groups composed of such religious believers will be free from all notions of authority, religious sovereignty. Thank you very much.
And that is the problem right now with the Muslims, is it not?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because what they will not give up is that ecclesiastical authority. And this started back in the time of Abraham with Isaac and his other son, right? The Muslims went with one, the Jews went with another. And so that split right there, it's been split ever since. And so one of them thinks that they're ecclesiastically have the ecclesiastically to call authority, not just one of them, but both of them do, both the Jews and the Muslims both think they're right. Where the only way we're going to have peace is give that up, and both of them fall under the purvey of God the Father himself is the only one who has authority. Everything else is non-existent. Right. Yeah, Pam.
So then that means that all the planets that are or have reached light and life have already done that.
They've done this already. That's right. They've had to give up the ecclesiastical authority of their religions and become under one head, which is God the Father. And that is the religious sovereignty and the authority on those planets. Okay, they may still have many religions on the planets of light and life, but they all believe that the sovereignty of those religions is wrapped up in the sovereignty of God the Father or his Son, which is Jesus, which is our God. Okay, so that's the way it works. There's no other way it can work because you'll always have problems if not. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
God is spirit, and God gives a fragment of his spirit self to dwell in the heart of man. Spiritually, all men are equal. The kingdom of heaven is free from castes, classes, social levels, and economic groups. You are all brethren.
Okay, so think about it this way. Because of the fragment of God within you, that makes you equal to every other being in all seven super universes. Does that make sense?
That's good.
That
That's
makes
good.
it.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mary.
That's good to know. So you
Yeah.
think on the universal level, how many other universes there are? Immense numbers of universes, but we're all
Yeah.
equal.
Well, all equal. That's right. That's why all this alien invasion stuff is a bunch of nonsense, as far as I'm concerned. Because the planets that are capable of travel in the local universes and the Euclids, if there's beings out there visiting us, they're from our local universe, I guarantee you. There is no way they can travel through time. I don't care what these physicists tell you and all these other things about bending time and going through wormholes and everything else. The Urantia book teaches us that all travel is done along certain circuits, mostly by angels. Okay, all other beings travel along these circuits as well. And there's no cert those are no there's is no non-allowed travel. So there is no possibility that alien warring beings would be allowed to leave their planet. Does that make sense?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about it, because all the beings in the seven super universes are monitored and they're under control. They're not allowed to go zip into another universe and invade a planet that's basically evolving along the lines it's supposed to, that would mean there would be no control, no government of the local universe of Nevadon. All right. And I guarantee you, anything that we're seeing in the sky, these are all beings of the local universe in Nevadon. And guess who these beings are? They are our brothers and sister under the spiritual authority of Michael and God the Father. Okay? There aren't any aliens with eight arms and tentacles and all this stuff. That's not what they look like. They look humanoid. They might have antennas, we don't know, but they're still humanoid. They're just like ours. They have lives just like ours. They're evolving just like we did, but they're on different levels. And the levels above us, they don't have any interest in coming back down to our level and getting shot down by a bunch of crazy people, right?
Yeah, you bet.
Look at it that way. Because that's what we are. We're a bunch of crazy people because we can't get along. And so that's why this revelation was given to us to try to bring us along a little bit, to try to enlighten us a little bit, to prepare us to step in light and life. And I guarantee you, if these beings are out there zipping around in space, they're probably from planets either in light and life or close enough to light and life that they have no interest in coming down and bombing us because we're like little ants to them. Does that make sense? People think I'm crazy for saying such things, but that's reality.
It's logical.
It's logical. When you come right down to it, it just makes sense. All right. So the thing is, it's a lot more interesting to latch hold of science fiction and be scared and all these other things. It's a lot more fun to than to realize that you're basically safe. Like Jesus said himself, I'm of the opinion that there is nothing in the universe that can harm me, and I'm of the same opinion. Okay, and that includes ancient aliens or beings from outer space and all this other stuff. Okay, now I've preached tonight. Let's move on. Any other questions about any of that, y'all? I don't need to justify myself anymore. Okay, now I've lost who's up. I think I'm up. But the moment that you lose sight of the spirit sovereignty of God the Father, some one religion will begin to assert its superiority over other religions. And then, instead of peace on earth and goodwill among men, there will start dissensions, recriminations, even religious wars, at least wars among religionists. This is Jesus teaching this, not me. Okay? So that's what happens when you assert yourself above other people. Diane.
Free will beings who regard themselves as equals, unless they mutually acknowledge themselves as subjects to some super sovereignty, some authority over and above themselves, sooner or later are tempted to try out their ability to gain power and authority over other persons and groups. The concept of equality never brings peace except in the mutual recognition of some overcontrolling influence of sovereignty. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, this is the underlying problem in all our political issues.
It's the truth.
Okay, because we don't have a recognized super sovereignty over all, so it gives all these politicians and everyone else the excuse of abusing their trust. Okay, and that abuse of trust is where we go down the wrong road. If you believe in your trust and you believe in the sovereignty of God, you won't steal other people's money. That's as easily as I can say it. Okay, Pam, would you take the next one?
The Urmia religion Yes, live together in comparative peace and tranquility because they had fully surrendered all their notions of religious sovereignty. Spiritually, they all believed in a sovereign God, socially full and unchangeable authority rested in their
Challengeable, unchallengeable.
presiding head. Oh, okay.
It's un the
Oh,
unchallengeable
unchallengeable
authority. There we go. Yeah.
authority rested in their presiding head, Sim Boynton. They well knew what would happen to any teacher who assumed to lord it over his fellow teachers. There can be no lasting religious peace on Urantia until all religious groups freely surrender all their notions of divine favor, chosen people, and religious sovereignty. Only when God the Father becomes supreme will men become religious brothers and live together in religious peace on earth?
If God the Father is the only sovereign of all this, what do we have to fight about?
You know, this brought to mind the conflict in the Mid East. And we have two warring factions, as everybody knows. The Islamic faction, which is, either you're my way or you're dead. And then we have the Jewish factor, which are the chosen people,
Chosen people, yeah. And you're
which
going to find
is
out
it.
in this paper there are no chosen peoples,
Yeah,
right?
and basically, if those two factions would give up those two ideas, there could be peace.
Yeah, they'd stop sending bombs over to each other,
Should
wouldn't
I
they?
write Trump?
Yep, you
Oh,
should write
okay.
Trump. He probably already realizes this. That's why he's trying to be the peacemaker constantly. He hasn't come to the realization of the sovereignty of God, I don't believe, but he's on his way there. We all make progress at different states. All right. Jane, would you take this next one?
Political sovereignty. While the master's teaching concerning the sovereignty of God is a truth, only complicated by the subsequent appearance of the religion about him among the world's religions, his presentations concerning political sovereignty are vastly complicated by the political evolution of nation life during the last 1900 years and more. In the times of Jesus, there were only two great world powers, the Roman Empire in the West and the Han Empire in the East, and these were widely separated by the Parthian Kingdom and other intervening lands of the Caspian and Turkestan regions. We have therefore, in the following presentation, departed more widely from the substance of the Master's teachings at Urmia concerning political sovereignty, at the same time attempting to depict the import of such teachings as they are applicable to the peculiarly critical stage of the evolution of political sovereignty in the 20th century after Christ.
Okay, and next time we're going to explain all this difficulty, right? Because we're out of time.
Yeah, it's a big one.
That's a big one. Yeah, I want to go into it a little bit deeper, and we don't have enough time to do that. So let's do our prayer of acceptance before we quit. And we'll take up at number 5 next time on Thursday. Let me swap the share. All right. Gary, would you like to read our prayer of acceptance tonight?
Yeah, I'll do it. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved, not sacri no sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nabadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
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 And
Amen.
thanks everyone for coming. Mary, we enjoyed having you. Please come see us again.
Thank you.
And
Nice
everyone.
meeting you,
Yes.
Gary.
Much. Nice meeting all of you also. That'll be
Okay.
great.
And everybody at home is listening us at home on the YouTube and
I must
Vimeo.
apologize for Mary and I's tardiness. It was my fault.
That's okay. Y'all still came. We're getting more and more views on these studio things, so the word's getting out there a little bit. I had so many Facebook watchers, and when Facebook stopped saving the videos, gosh, the viewership went down crazy. It's coming back up now, though. Okay, y'all, thanks for coming. I love you guys, and I will see everybody on Thursday, and we'll take it up on number five. And
Thank you.
thanks, guys. See you later then.
I'll see
Thanks.
y'all.
Bye
Take
bye.
care.